So I try not to drink soda because I've been told it's like injecting poison directly into your veins. But I do about every other night have a full Coke Zero. That being said, so
one time I gave up soda for an entire year. I was a big Diet Dr. Pepper guy.
Ooh, Dr. Pepper is like a full dessert. It is. It's like having a slice
and
of cake.
I felt myself getting addicted.
Wait, so if you guys were playing in March Madness, if you had like Caitlin Clark level fame and you could be sponsored by any soda company, which one would you pick? Because it seems like you guys have a lot of
but Popeyes for one. And
I like that you've clearly thought about
this. Oh, of course I have. You're just the first person to ask me about it.
From the newsroom of the Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers. It is Wednesday, April 3rd. We are nearing the end of March Madness, a.k.a. the college basketball championship tournament that happens at the end of every season. And I have not personally been watching all of the games, but I do feel like I have not been able to escape the hype around these games, and specifically the hype around women's basketball these days. So today, to unpack all of this, talk about the state of women's basketball, where we're at March Madness, the heroes and villains of this tournament, today we have two guests, one of whom is Ava Wallace, who covers basketball. Ava, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we are also here with Kent Babb. Kent is a sports feature writer at The Post. He recently found himself in the middle of the March Madness discourse with a lot of buzz around one of his stories that published over the weekend, which we are going to get into in this conversation. Kent, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
So I want to start by talking about the hype around women's March Madness this year. And I will say, as like a casual watcher, you know, I like haven't been watching every game from beginning to end. But what I do is I go on YouTube or whatever after a particularly big game, and I like watch the highlights and see like Caitlin Clark, you know, like with these three-pointers from the center of the court. But then I also have been noticing, like, down in the comments, just the number of people who are like watching these videos like, oh my God, look at Caitlin, look at Angel, like this is incredible. And the number of people who are saying like, I don't even know a like men's college basketball player right now, and yet I'm like so invested in the women. And I think maybe that's like a reductive place to start things, that like, wow, the women are suddenly being paid attention to even more than men. Incredible. But I do think it's like an important moment, and I'm curious how you guys think that we got here. Like, why has this been such a big year for women's college basketball?
I think it's kind of the culmination of a bunch of different things that actually starts, and you've kind of seen growth in the WNBA as well. And I think it goes back to, for the WNBA, really around 2020, when we were kind of having this big racial reckoning nationwide, and the WNBA was in a really, really good position to take advantage of that. They played in a bubble that summer. Like, they were out there, they were protesting with NBA. I think they got a lot of eyes and a lot of interest that way, and kind of it's been the charge of the WNBA really since it existed. Like, are you a cause or are you a sports league? And it was just the perfect moment for them to say, we're both, and actually people are finally ready to kind of acknowledge us that we're both. So I think you had a lot of people paying more attention to women's basketball in general. And then in college, we're kind of right in the thick of the NIL season. That's name, image, and likeness. So obviously, you've got a lot of personalities in college basketball, specifically women's college basketball, who've profited off of that hugely. But what you're seeing is, it's like someone like Cameron Brink, who's a forward for Stanford, who has a huge NIL presence. She had also millions of followers in high school. So you're seeing a bunch of personalities who are in college. We've still got seniors who are playing in their COVID year. So they've been around for a long time and had a chance to kind of grow with an audience and build their audience, who are now all over Instagram. So you're seeing, you know, young people get involved. They're in every other commercial. If you're watching a night of March Madness, you see Caitlin Clark 30 times a night, probably. So I think it's just a really good confluence of events culturally and advertising wise that are just kind of bringing women's basketball players at a bunch of different levels to the fore.
That's an interesting argument, like the name, image, and likeness, because, you know, I feel like that conversation was all about money and whether these players should be able to like make some money off of their appearances, but that it's actually like making the case that it's been very good for the sport that you have these kind of very public appearances and Caitlin Clark in the Gatorade commercials, and that that's actually like helping everyone in women's basketball.
And I think these things are happening all at the right time. Like Caitlin Clark, who is the super dynamic, dominant player who is so silky smooth that you can't not watch, right at the time when players, women and men, are being paid not just for their play, but for their personality and being a character and their marketability. And Caitlin came along and just captivated the entire nation because she is Steph Curry and she can hit shots from anywhere on the court and she can create shots. And it's just you, if you blink, you've missed something that might be really special. And you've also got teams like LSU and South Carolina and Stanford and UConn. And everyone sort of has their own identity. Everyone has sort of this collection of characters. And what happens is this become like an ongoing story that you have your team and some players that you care for and people and characters that you really don't care for. Hmm. And I think it's really interesting that people are talking trash. And like you mentioned the comments, like I really get a big kick out of a lot of my guy friends who were just like, I don't care about Caitlin Clark. It's still women's basketball. Nobody cares. And it reminds me of like when Game of Thrones was really popular and like everybody was like, well,
it's like,
I'm
sure you cannot care, but like it's all that's on
it's
TV.
It's just
right
like, well,
now.
I'm not watching Game of Thrones. Okay, well, you're missing a hell of a show. Yeah. And for me, like, I shouldn't even say this because I'm a sports writer, but I have watched 0 minutes of the men's tournament. I didn't fill out a bracket this year, maybe for the first time in my life. And I've watched a ton of the women's game. Mm-hmm. Just the women's tournament is where the action is. Mm-hmm. And when there's a game like LSU Iowa, you can't not watch. It's so entertaining. And it's not entertaining for a sport that people haven't paid attention to forever. It's entertaining, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder, though, like how much of this is part of an intentional effort to like cover these sports more equally and give them kind of like equal play on television, and how much of that has been sort of like setting up the moment that finally, when there is, you know, when there are these players that have these like huge amounts of fandom and these like great narratives coming together, that they like have a platform to shine in the way that they didn't before.
It's been very intentional. And I think covering women's sports, it always has to be intentional because we in the media and people on TV don't give enough attention to women's sports comparatively. It always has to be a very intentional thing. These things don't happen by accidents. As in 2 years ago, there was no lead-in show on ESPN to the primetime women's March Madness games. Hmm. Now you turn on the TV at 6 p.m. and there are three people sitting around a desk talking about that game for an hour.
And that didn't happen before?
No, they would just put the game on and it was just like, oh, okay, I guess this is happening. There was not a lot of advertisement. A lot of people weren't talking about it naturally. So it's been definitely very intentional, at least from the TV and broadcast side, which is, I think, how most people are taking in these games in terms of we have to have people who know what they're talk about these games. We have to have the right proper production around it. So, yeah, that's been a huge part of it, I think.
In the old days, not only was this not on TV and covered in the same way, but the women's teams in the tournament didn't have access to the same kind of weight rooms and conditioning and resources. And oh, by the way, that was in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That like behind the scenes that yeah, they were just like clearly huge, being treated yeah, completely
I mean, they
unequally. Just,
there was the men's tournament, which is this like billions upon billions of dollar product that TNT and CBS pay a ton of money for, and this other thing. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the primary product, at least financially, is not the most entertaining and appealing one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know, are men's basketball players in college like feeling left out? Or,
oh, man, I feel terrible for them. You know?
Do you?
Oh, I do not. It's okay.
I don't think they're feeling left out. I think it's not like the level has dropped because the level around the women's game has improved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the men should just get a little bit better and more entertaining. That's kind of what I would say.
If they just played a little hard, you know.
Just, right.
Can they dunk? That was a joke. No one come for me.
And how much do you think that this is going to carry through both into the future? I mean, this is Caitlin Clark's last year in college basketball. She's going to be going to the WNBA, she said. So how much, like, is that excitement going to be there next year? And also, how much is this going to translate to the WNBA? Because I think a lot of the conversation around Caitlin Clark's decision in particular is the fact that, like, when she starts playing professional basketball, though she has a ton of, you know, outside endorsements and is going to be making money that way, like, her salary in women's pro hoops is going to be the tiniest fraction of the men's, and that parity, like, really isn't there on a professional level. So, like, is this going to change the game going forward?
Change the game in terms of salary? I think the only thing that's going to change the game in terms of salary in the WNBA is the league's going to have to start making a lot more money. And that comes with things like attendance and viewerships, but it's got to be a lot more robust than that. I think it's certainly going to change the conversation going forward, though. Caitlin Clark, like you said, is a very specific case. And Iowa fans, which we have not shouted out yet as being a huge part of this conversation, is a, I do mean this in a good way, rabid fan base. I mean, like, it's just, you haven't, it's, you know, Sabrina Ionescu was breaking records and doing all this stuff up in the Pacific Northwest a couple of years ago, and it was nothing like the Iowa fans. So I think it's going to change the conversation. I think the WNBA has a lot more roadblocks than women's college basketball in that they are a business that needs to make money also.
Yeah, and that a lot of that does come from TV. And I think there's a chance that it translates to the WNBA. I'm also curious to see whether the college game can take advantage of this momentum, because once Clark is gone, the number one draw is gone. And if Angel Reese goes to the WNBA, the second biggest draw is gone. And like it or not, sports depends on its superstars. We don't collectively tune in for teams so much anymore as we do to see these individuals that excite us and captivate us and want to be like them. And once they're gone, they're gone. And like, that's been the case in college sports forever in the men's game. But I don't know that the women's game has ever faced this before, because this confluence has never occurred before. They've had superstars, Candace Parker. I mean, there's a huge list of them, but it's never been able to take advantage of that momentum. I think this is the best opportunity ever for the women's basketball sport, but I don't know yet how it's going to capitalize. I think it will, but they need somebody to step back up.
Mm-hmm. Part of that is because the WNBA is small. I mean, there's a lot of room across the national landscape for college basketball. There are 12 WNBA teams. There is way, way, way more talent than there is spots for these people on rosters. And that's part of why people have been calling for the WNBA to expand. They're coming to the Bay Area 2025. They can get that rolling. But again, it comes back to money. They need money to have more teams.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to take a pause there, and then after the break, we're going to talk about a team that is no longer in the running for the national championship, but I think still very much on our minds, and that is Louisiana State University. And we're going to hear from Kent about his big story from over the weekend about LSU's coach, Kim Mulkey. We'll be right back.
In-laws, love them or hate them, you're pretty much stuck with them. And when you're a ruler in the Middle Ages, that can be a serious problem. It might even land you dead. I'm Dan Jones, and on season 4 of This Is History, I'm telling the story of England's weirdest king, Henry III. He's in way over his head, and he's surrounded by bloodthirsty relatives with their eyes on his throne. To listen, search This Is History and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Kent, you spent a lot of time for the past few months reporting specifically on LSU's women's basketball team and specifically Kim Mulkey, their coach. Tell me about why this was something that you wanted to hone in on, like who this woman is and how she became as dominant as she's been.
Really, I was intrigued by her. I mean, like, she's a little 5'4" white lady from the country of Louisiana. And somehow she can draw the absolute best and turn the emotional screws on these women that are 40 years younger than her and look nothing like her and think nothing like her and really only have one thing in common with her, and that's that they're all incredible and passionate about basketball.
Which is a fascinating place to start, and obviously like the makings of a compelling profile. But I'm going to be honest and say that when I first learned that you were doing the story, it wasn't because I'd heard it here at the Post or it wasn't because I'd saw it published, but because I saw the news that this coach had threatened to sue the Post.
Heard about that.
And her concern about this story.
I'm not going to let the Washington Post attack this university, this awesome team of young women I have, or me without a fight. I've hired the best defamation law firm in the country, and I will sue the Washington Post if they publish a false story about me. Not many people are in a position to hold these kind of journalists accountable, but I am. And I'll do it.
Can you kind of talk through that moment? And despite that threat of a lawsuit, like, the story has come out, it's published. And what are the kind of pieces of your reporting that you feel are most important to highlight?
Well, Kim is a really controversial figure. And, you know, when I was talking about characters before, she may be the most interesting and colorful character in the whole game. And
colorful, like,
yeah, literally
in terms of her outfits and, like, the feathers and the sequins and just, like, not, I think, the like, normal power suit that you see a lot of women's coaches wear.
Yeah, like, she doesn't wear kind of the pantsuit that's sort of the traditional coach's outfit. I mean, like, last year she literally wore feathers, like, pink feathers to a game. And like, when I went to an LSU game this year, people are dressing in sequins like Kim. They dye their hair blonde like Kim. And it's they want to look and be like Kim. And it's just one of those things where, like, you either love her or you can't stand her if you're a fan of basketball. And, you know, starting in, I would say, 2016, she started having some pretty controversial opinions. When the pandemic happened, Mulkey, she said some pretty controversial things, including that the NCAA should, quote, dump COVID testing during the tournament. When she was introduced at LSU, she very dramatically threw her mask and said, I'm going to get rid of this damn mask. So she just says things that traditionally aren't said. And, like, in the kind of hyper corporate world of college sports, she wears, does, says things that kind of nobody else does. And you either like that or you don't. Mm-hmm. And she's really, really polarizing. But from my point of view as a writer, I just think she's so fascinating because she cuts against the grain. She spans four decades and two, maybe three generations of basketball. And somehow she just keeps winning. I mean, she's won more national championships than any coach ever in women's basketball, except for Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma. Pat Summitt, the legendary late coach of Tennessee, and Gino Auriemma, who's been at UConn forever. And Mulkey has just done it in a very different way, and she just does not apologize for being herself. So in a weird way, like, she's super emblematic of this moment, and she also is a complete conflict of this moment, because, like, she's this old school, hard nosed, do it like I say to do it, by God, coach, that if you don't, you're off my team. And I don't care if you got paid. I don't care if you're a superstar. It's my team. And the coach being the one who can say it's my team is sort of going away. So she's sort of a last of her kind, even in this moment of change.
And you talked to so many people who played for her in the past. You talked to her family members, some of whom don't speak with her anymore. Talk a little bit about what that told you about, like, who she is and what drives her.
I'm always interested in the cost of greatness. And, you know, like, this is maybe silly, but, like, everybody thinks they want greatness. But, like, the people who actually achieve greatness, you know, they have this, like, isolation about them. They're very lonely. And I just wondered, what was the cost of her greatness? And in her case, it's she's dedicated and so passionate and so good at what she does on the court that it's her way. And the cliche is her way or the highway. But, like, in her case, if you don't do it just like she asks and demands, and that can be from family members to the person who didn't hire her at her alma mater, Louisiana Tech, to Baylor when she left from there in 2021, to players who don't dress or look like she thinks they should to be, quote, ladylike. If you don't do it like she says you should, it's her way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't spoken to her father for 37 years. The father was unfaithful to Kim's mom. Kim wrote about this in her own autobiography. And Kim never forgave her father and won't even have a conversation with him now. So he now slips off into the LSU arena to watch these LSU games because that's as close as he can get to his daughter.
Wow.
Now that he's 86 and he and I talked about death, and this is as close as she'll allow him to get.
Wow. And just to be clear, my understanding from reading your story is that while Kim Mulkey's counsel, her lawyers, that they did provide comment for your story, in terms of Mulkey herself, she never agreed to talk to you for the story.
She very much did not comment on the story. And look, I mean, I gave Kim ample opportunities. I went to Baton Rouge twice. I put in writing my intent to interview her, my desire to interview her. I went, I think, out of my way to make it clear that I was doing a story. And honestly, it may be one of the downsides of this increase in media attention, that this is the top now. Like, women's basketball is at the top. Like, it's got our attention. And that also means it's got media attention and scrutiny. And I think a lot of the figures who built the sport want this, but they're also uncomfortable in this.
You know, I feel like I have seen some pushback against some of the criticisms of Mulkey, and Ava, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, of like, well, okay, so she is tough on her players. She is highly controversial, like says things that people, I think, rightfully don't like. But at the same time, like, this is what a lot of male coaches of men's teams, how they conduct themselves. And it's actually like not that surprising in the context of coaching. And like, this is sort of singling her out because she is a woman. And what are expectations of what a female coach of a female team, like how, you know, like soft and cuddly she should be. I don't know. Do you think that that's like a valid pushback, or like, what is your sense of where the question of a double standard comes into this?
I mean, I think you always have to be aware of double standards, but I think, as Kent said, she's the most colorful person in women's college basketball, and she invites those eyes. I mean, you don't dress like that if you don't want people to talk about you or look at you. And you can dress how you want and expect what you want, but Kim Mulkey is not shying from any fight. And that's actually something I thought Candace Buckner wrote about really, really well this week about the LSU.
Our colleague, the sports columnist, yes, here at the Post.
About the LSU team and just how many eyes they've had on them, and how many positive and negative things come with that. But, you know, it's not that they didn't invite it. So, yeah, I think you can have a nuanced conversation about it, but we can't pretend that nobody's courting this attention in women's basketball. And like Kent said, you know, you spend all these years fighting for eyes. This is all that comes with it. You've got to be ready for that. And that's not saying that people just get to say mean things. And Angel Reese, the player for LSU, has said she's gotten death threats and all things like that. That excuses none of that. That's not the attention I'm talking about. But yeah, attention, good and bad, comes with being the hot thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's enough about LSU, because they are no longer in the tournament. And here we have the Final Four that we have to look forward to. Maybe you can talk through the four teams that are left. And what are you thinking about as you see how the rest of this tournament unfolds?
So if you're asking me my pick, I am thinking we're going to get a South Carolina-Iowa championship matchup. And I am really interested to see how Iowa, who went to the title game last year and lost to LSU, I'm really interested to see how they do it this time around. Their coach, Lisa Bluter, came out and said, I think we're going to go to fewer events in between, because there are several days off in between the Elite Eight and the Final Four games. Mm-hmm. And Caitlin Clark will be collecting all of these awards and doing all these interviews. And their coach said, I think we're going to do less of that and like rest a little bit more and
yeah,
prepare ourselves
kidding.
A little bit more for the game. So I'm kind of interested to see Caitlin Clark go up against South Carolina's defense, which has been the best team in the nation since the beginning of the season. Their defense is, I mean, they will just suffocate you. Caitlin Clark has kind of dealt with good defenses pretty handily all season. But I think the South Carolina team has a little bit of growing up to do. They have some maturing to do. Dawn Staley, their coach, has said it herself. So I'm fascinated to see that matchup and just see how that defense handles Caitlin Clark, see how Clark handles herself differently this time around. And if I were a betting woman, I would be betting on Iowa.
Kent, what about you?
I mean, that's the heavyweight championship match that I think everybody wants to see. I mean, the other two teams are NC State, which is a little bit of an underdog, and UConn, which despite,
used to be like synonymous with winning this tournament and like a level of excellence that was unchallengeable.
Totally. I mean, like, I think they've won something like 12 national championships. It's an absurd number. And like, that may be undercutting them because I just don't know. And it's so absurdly high that it's just a ridiculous number. And they used to just punish teams. And like, they went two full years in the early aughts without losing a game. And they have set the standard, and now they've been caught up with. And I think it'll be very interesting to see if Iowa or South Carolina can sort of officially take the crown. Because even though I think Connecticut has been passed, nobody's taken the crown just from them, and certainly not in a championship game. So like, part of me wants to see UConn get to the final, but I really want to see that South Carolina-Iowa matchup. I mean, it really is the best defense versus the best player. And last year, Caitlin Clark just carved up South Carolina. And same thing. I mean, South Carolina had the best defense in the nation with an All-American, Aaliyah Boston, and they couldn't do anything with Caitlin Clark. I mean, she just carved them up. And just watching that was just amazing. And it was just like this magical thing that I woke my daughter up and got her out of bed to come watch.
Oh, no way. And I was just like, actually incredibly adorable.
And I was just like, you got to see this. And, you know, it's just one of those things where like, it's a moment and I wanted her to be part of it. And I have a feeling there's going to be another moment like that. I hope it's when the sun's out.
So it sounds like you guys are rooting for the players and the teams and the narratives that you're excited for. But like, who is the villain in all of this? Like, who are you? Who do you want to lose? Who do you want to see like suffer?
Suffer. Man.
I think nationally, I mean, for as many people, I think LSU was kind of the villain a little bit. And they're the ones who puff out their chests and everything like that. I think there were obviously a lot of people love them and love to watch them play. But yeah, you're right. Kind of the villain is gone. I love how Kent put it, who's going to take the crown from UConn, because we're not just watching these programs, but these are some of the best, most interesting coaches too. Like Dawn Staley in women's basketball is so important, and she led the USA women to a gold medal in Tokyo. She's one of those people like Kim Mulkey who've won at every level as a player, as an assistant, as a coach internationally with the WNBA. Going up against Gina Auriemma, you know, going up against Caitlin, I understand that's not the coach of Iowa, but you've got these like titans of the game competing too. Man, I'm really excited. But
yeah, this is WrestleMania. I mean, like,
what a bar.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just like, this is what it's been going toward. And like, I do wish, as much as like, I think it's awesome that NC State is in the Final Four, I wish that the committee had put LSU in its own regional where they could, the dream Final Four would have been LSU, South Carolina, Iowa, and Connecticut. Because at some point, this collision course in this moment in time has to declare a champion. And last year, it didn't quite work out where everybody was involved at that moment where 8 million people are going to be watching like they will be during the Final Four. That's my only gripe. My villain is the committee, because they didn't put LSU in the right regional so they could make it to the Final Four. Even though this wasn't the best LSU team, man, it would have been just like a perfect story to have these four programs, these four titans, old school versus new school, history versus progress. Let's just see what happens and see who takes the belt.
Kent, you undercut the viewership a little bit there. 9.9 million watched last year's title game. That's great.
That's
9.9
nuts, yeah.
million.
It's incredible.
Whoa.
You guys have me so hyped to watch the final. I'm just, this was great. Before we wrap up, I actually have one more question that seems of pretty vital importance. So apparently the three-point line was wrong at some point. Like, what was the deal with that? There was, like, someone drew the line wrong?
I believe it was at the regional site in Portland at Moda Center, where someone made the coaches aware. I don't know if it was the NCAA said, hey, this is wrong, or someone said, that looks off. But I think the distance between the three-point line and the baseline were different on either side of the court by like 9 inches, and nobody noticed it. And then
that's
a lot. And I watched the games. I also didn't notice it until those pictures were published, and I was like, oh my God, that's so obvious. That's like very obvious to the naked eye. And I mean,
man, the conspiracy theorists are going to have a ball with that.
I was
that.
Like, if
we
that
can't
game
even trust the tape measure
had been decided by a 3-pointer, like at the buzzer. No, but the both schools agreed to play the game, and apparently games had been going on like that the whole time. So I don't know if you. If
in
you wanna...
fairness, you do switch sides at half. So,
oh my gosh, we have standards, Kent. You live in a society. Yeah. Come on, NCAA. Kent's right. They're always the villain.
I think they welcome that. That crown has already been
yes,
took.
Yes, very true.
Well, Ava and Kent, thank you both so much for being here. This was lovely to chat with you. You have me so excited for the rest of this tournament. And thanks for bringing all your insights to our listeners.
Thank you, Martine. This
thank
was great.
Martine.
Ava Wallace is a reporter here at The Post who covers basketball. And Kent Babb is a sports features writer. That's it for Post Reports. Thank you so much for listening. Today's show was produced by Sabi Robinson, was edited by Ted Muldoon. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, The Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from The Washington Post wherever you listen.